Advisory Team Meeting. First one of the new group. Introductions. Rocky Houston first.
I'm Rocky, lead bureau for Parks and Lands Division here in Public Works. I manage 15,000 acres.
You'll have to speak up for the.
I always believe if you want to listen, you'll come into the room. But I'm Rocky Houston. I work for Clark County. Welcome, everyone. It's been a long road to get here.
I'm Matt Baum. I'm the operations supervisor for the Parks and Lands South and West units. Also including the farm in that mix of properties. And we have Lindy.
I'm a special guest.
You still get announced. You're here with us.
I'm the park and trails planner, or a park and trails planner for Clark County Parks and Lands, and I've been working on the Heritage Farm Sustainability Plan for the past 2 years.
With that, we'll move to the group. Rachel, you want to start?
My name's Rachel Feston. I own the Urban Snail Farm, and I do market farming and aquaponics research.
I'm Lisa Beatek. I am very happy to plug the Natural Garden Tour. I was on it for 2 years during the pandemic when they sent CVTV out, so you can look up my garden if you'd like. I grew up on a farm. We grew soybeans, hay, wheat, corn. I was predisposed to rare farm breeds because of the traits that they bring from the old times. Big discussion. I have been a restaurateur. I've opened up 100 different sites in the Midwest, I will say that. And I'm just so pleased to be here. I live near the Heritage Farm, and I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of all of you, too, just for being here. So thanks for having me.
Yeah, hi, my name's Bill Fickett, and I worked in agriculture and food processing all my life. And I retired 4 years ago. And I've actually gone into the Heritage Farm when the Extension Service was running there and talked with the Extension agents about setting up trials that we were going to do in Woodland or here at the farm, things like that. But most recently, I volunteered for a couple of years for the Clark County Food Bank out there to harvest and weed and do that kind of thing. I also went through the composting and recycling program in 2019. I've had tours with the master gardeners out there. I agree with what the plan was, and I want to make sure that it goes forward.
I'm Sandy Brown, and I used to work for WSU Extension and retired there 6 years ago, and have been on the previous Heritage Farm Advisory Group, and also part of Food System Council, and chair of the Public Health Advisory Committee. So, involved in a lot of things in the community, and my passion is around health and local agriculture.
I'm Carol Levinen. I currently am Executive Secretary of Clark County Citizens United, but the Heritage Farm is special to me because it used to be my old stomping grounds. When my folks sold the farm in Phillida, I'm a farm kid who lived in the fields, never had school vacation. Had to pick every single thing that they ever grew out there, and then take that money, buy my school clothes, and go to school. Went to Phillida grade school. Phillida, Sarah, all this area was all my stomping ground. When my folks sold the farm, we moved to Hazeldale on the other side, and what they call Logan Hill, and I had a horse, and that whole area, it was all farmland. That whole area was our playground. And so I spent a lot of hours on that Heritage Farm land and the Hazeldale Park there. We used to go there and have lunch and then ride horses all through there. And I remember the cemetery. We were always trying to guess who these people were at the top of the cemetery over there. So that's really special ground. And it also happens to be the last in the urban area of the Hillsborough loam prime soil. And I would like to see that preserved, and I would like to see it turn into a park, a regional park for everyone to enjoy.
I believe that's everybody.
There's also Amy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Amy Arnold.
I'm the office assistant for the Parks and Amenities, twice as many, all the meetings and everything else.
Rocky, I'm not quite sure how you want to go through the approval of these past minutes.
Sure. So we'll give you a little background and formality. So while we were trying to get everyone appointed, we continued to operate with the current team we had. We didn't have a quorum, and so as such, we couldn't adopt the minutes. So I know that none of you were part of those meeting minutes. However, it's sort of ceremonial to put the old business behind us, so to get a motion to accept the minutes for the historical element. You guys can disagree, and we'll move them off the list as well. But that's the intent here, is to clean up that old business, get those minutes adopted, and sort of out on the website for review.
I'll move to pass the minutes. I was there, so I know they're accurate.
You know, Amy sent them out originally, and then and I read them then, and I just reread everything this afternoon. I'm fine to
second.
Yeah, I'll second. Did you make a motion?
I did, yes. Uh-huh.
Well, with motion and a second, is there any comments in regards to the minutes? Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Those who refrain?
I'm going to just stand back because I wasn't present, even though I would always vote for Sandy. Sandy, I want you to know, I'm sure they are just very terrific. Officially, I would just, as long as you have enough to pass that. Thanks
for allowing us to move those forward, and we'll make that record. So now it's to me and Matt to talk about farm operations.
Okay. Many of the farm partners have realized that our farm operations worker is out with medical. He's just had knee surgery, and we're not quite sure what his timeline is going to be. But I left a stack of my cards at the farm for folks to understand that they need to contact me if they need our help up there. We had this talk with the partners and the lessees. Was that this week or last week? I don't even remember what day.
Last week.
Last week.
7 days ago.
Was it really? Gosh.
What's the name of the guy that's...
Zane.
Zane?
Okay. Zane, yeah. He'll be... we do have people with expertise that could come in, and actually... These are the folks that will be, upon his return, will be continuing his education with heavy equipment, the farm equipment. They're not hanging around waiting for a job, but if somebody needs us to come out there to fix something, we have people to do it. To make that just as smooth as we can over the next 6-8 weeks, however long it takes for him to be back up and running. It could even be longer than that. So,
Matt, can I ask a question?
Yes.
I had the question brought to me the other day about contacting you if they needed something. And what's the turnaround once they make the request?
It depends on how big of an ask it is.
Okay.
It really does.
Yeah.
If it's as simple as, help, we've got a broken sprinkler, Bill Hodges can be there in 15 minutes and fix it in 5. If we're talking about a large, wow, we need to get a tractor out here and do this, mm-hmm. work, it might be 48 hours.
Okay.
But it's not going to be really about the same as if Zane was on site, more or less. I know that right now is when everybody has needs, but fortunately we've got new help for both the food bank and for WSU. I believe, did your person start yet, WSU, even though you're not technically here?
No, she's here. Just
You're sitting on you're sitting quietly in the do not sit here chair. Were you guys hiring a farm worker as well?
Yeah, we're looking at having someone just do some repair work.
Okay.
On the WSU equipment.
Okay. Yes. So as far as our people, we don't have anybody on site, but we have people that we can pull. Typically they're working on this west and south side of town. They can be there fairly quick at the bare minimum to make a quick assessment.
Okay.
So we're looking to do a couple different things. So the first thing is trying to channel all requests for work either through our customer service line or online forms so that we can get it into the system and then people see it quicker, so you're not looking upon just Matt answering the phone. No, you still can call Matt, but that's the thing. That way we can triage it. So the intent is, worst cases, at least in a day's time, to follow up to check on their requests. And if things are more urgent, of course, always call Matt or I, and then we'll work from there. And then as we move forward, utilizing that sort of work order system will allow us to line up the other people that need to be doing and then track those requests.
So would a preferred method, if someone asks about how do I get, is the preferred method to find the online form?
Yeah, and I'm, we're trying to get all of our contact, our lessees, the partners' emails to communicate out those links where then they'll have that as an email, as well as we've updated our forms for events and for lessees. Instead of calling it a program or a project, we call it a lessee, because it results in a lease, and so that's why I changed the name.
So you'd use that form then? The one that you get online?
No,
you're not doing that.
Okay. For quick work, they go ahead and if they called this number, they didn't get anything because I'm doing whatever else. They call the front public works customer service line, who can then put in a request in our work software, and that gets seen pretty quick, either by myself or the crew chiefs.
The change we're trying to make is that in the past, we had one person that was responsible. So if he was sick, there was nobody to do anything. It worked out great most days, I think. However, now we don't treat most of our operational tasks like that. We're just one person responsible for an asset. We have a team, and we divvy out that work as quickly as we can based off of the skill set and that. And so we're trying to utilize that same tool so we have potentially 15 people who could respond instead of just that one. And so that's sort of the thought we're trying to do, is make sure we're doing that. At the same time, as if a task comes in and requires three or four people to get it done very quickly, we have that ability to organize and have that number of people come to do a task. Now, are every one of those people farm gurus? Of course not. But at least we have that ability to have additional manpower. So that's a change we're trying to make to be more responsive and utilize our limited resources the best we can. And I brought up the other forms just because Sandy used to be the conduit. So anytime you had an event or a project question, all of it went to Sandy. And we're trying to be respectful of all of you as volunteers and make it Matt's problem or mine in regards to carrying that pail of water. And we will come to you as our HFAT is the nickname, Heritage Farm Advisory Team, to review those leases and those programs and those events that do require that additional consideration besides just a scheduling thing. So that, again, we're utilizing your skill set, your time as most effectively as well. And so that's some of the changes we're trying to do versus how it was operated in the past. And that way, if there's a problem with us getting back, it's me, I'm at fault. It's not Sandy's fault, it's not Lisa's fault, it's Rocky's fault. And then I look at Matt and say, help me out, man. And then we move forward.
It's a little different than that, actually.
Sorry, I didn't mean to complicate things. I just wanted to be able to give people the right answer other than call Matt.
No, that's the right answer.
It is the right answer, yes. But, you know, if they said, well, do you know how long it'll take? I can say, well, it'll take 24 hours or you know, whatever. But it depends on.
It
so
depends
I just
on
wanted
the
to have an answer form instead of.
Because we will allocate the appropriate resources for whatever the task may be. I'm not just going to send somebody blind into the.
I just didn't want them to believe the comment that it could be weeks or months. So I'm trying to alleviate that for you.
People that say that either haven't been listening or have made up their mind prior to our allocation of resources and how we're doing things, quite simply.
So now, are these people contracting with the county or
no,
are they
employees?
My staff. They're employees of the county.
It's our
and
staff.
They work on
everything.
Everything. Okay, I see.
In the parks
department.
Okay. Parks and lands, yes.
And the distances that you were explaining to me was your
they got two teams that work pretty much from that 70th Street, 8th Street office this way. Mm-hmm. You can find somebody who's an expert on whatever you guys need that can come. They're all highly skilled with heavy equipment across the board. And then I have one irrigation tech who is an actual irrigation expert. Might have another one on deck here soon.
So there's going to be a lot of onboarding, except for Sandy. We'll have her be the trainer for a lot of
I'll try to stuff. Keep it simple.
No, you've got a lot of information and a lot. We all have a lot to learn from the experience and the time that you've had here. I'm appreciative that you continue to move forward with this role. But we've got a lot of educating, a lot of learning to do in regards to what, how the farm operates, all of our different roles and responsibilities moving forward. We're not going to get through that tonight. It's going to take probably a couple sessions or a year as we continue to learn stuff. We're trying to get things on a cyclical thing. So we're looking at leases at one time a year, providing ourselves the time it takes to do a lease. That's how we manage most of the programs people are working on the farm is through a lease. So there's a plot of land that they are managing and they're responsible for, and we have a contractual agreement. We have just like we have an agreement with WSU, it's different, but it's still an agreement where there's acreage identified for WSU and their programming out there in the administrative building. So we're trying to get everything, we're all on the same page off of that process moving forward. Each agreement's different because our partners are different, and based off of the rules, laws, we can do some things for some partners. So the food bank, who is assisting feeding the poor, we have a different way of what we can contribute without getting in trouble with the Constitution versus if we had a for-profit, if Rocky wanted to go out there and grow rhododendrons and I wanted to lease it, I'd be paying full market price because I'm a commercial entity. So there's these scales. And so over time, we'll continue to talk through that. We're working on an operations plan update, which is a product that we've been wanting to update for a few years, but what Lindy's going to talk about is sort of wait for that to close out. And I think Lindy's conversation tonight and presentation is a good summary of a lot of the things that we're working on as we're trying to view the future for the farm. And unless you have additional reports, let's turn it over to Lindy.
So, are you going to explain what you mean by sustainability? I mean, I guess I was reading through all these minutes and all this information, but nothing really gave me a description of, I mean, are there goals and objectives and that sort of thing?
Sure. Let me go through my presentation, and I will address all of that for you. I will talk about the progress that we've made to date on our plan development, public engagement that we went through just briefly, and then I'll review in a little bit more depth our sustainability plan and talk about next steps in terms of implementing the plan as well as just finalizing the plan development. What's the next slide? It's kind of difficult to see. Can we make it larger? There we go. Minimize the chat. So this is a timeline of the work that we've done on the project, and I'll explain so your question by starting a little bit before a couple years before the timeline starts in 2020. Parks and Lands went to the Clark County Council to have the master plan update adopted, and at that time there was a lot of discussion around the farm and the draw on the general fund because all of the expenses that the county has or the Parks and Lands has to operate the farm come from the general fund. And there's interest from the council to reduce the draw on the general fund and also to increase public access.
And so they directed us to develop what they called a business plan for the farm. And that didn't really get kind of completely off the ground. I think there were some starts here and there at developing that business plan, but then there was some staff turnover in Parks and Lands. And around early 20...
Maybe you're gonna talk about the issue.
In early 2022, we started this program, or this project in earnest, Rocky and David and I. And we reaffirmed the goals of the plan and development, and we recharacterized it as a sustainability plan because we felt that this is not a business. We're not out here to drive in a huge bunch of revenue for the county, that we wanted it to maintain itself over time and to increase public access. So we went to the first dot here is that we check our project goals with the council and the Park Advisory Board, because Parks and Lands reports to the Park Advisory Board. And we just reconfirmed those goals that we needed to try to reduce the draw on the general fund, we needed to increase public access, and we need to do that while we're implementing our approved master plan from 2020. So our next step was to develop a steering committee, because we knew we needed a group of folks who were experts in the farm, and also people who from the community might be able to use the farm if they knew more about it. And we put together a steering committee. We had given those lists to the county council and also to the park advisory board, just as the organizations that would represent on the steering committee, and they kind of tweaked that for us in the beginning. So it took us some time to get those folks going. And in fall of 2022, we started with our steering committee, and I'll talk a little more about them in a little bit. At that time, we did a bunch of background sessions. We provided them with a lot of information, reports that had been put together. One of those is a WSU Metro Center report that provided some operational strategies for what changes needed to be made at the farm, or what they saw, and some interview based on interviews and other sites that they had looked at. And we had tours of the farm. We just gave history of the farm. Christine spoke about all of the current farm uses, and Justin O'Day came and talked about agricultural research and what the farm is being used for at that time. Shortly after that, after those background sessions, we had our first two open houses in December of 2022. So we invited the public to come and learn more about plan development. It was here in this room. We gave an overview, a brief overview on that 2020 master plan update. We felt like people might not have heard about the project since then, and we wanted to make sure about the project with the master plan and what was planned for the property. We introduced the sustainability plan and what the goals of that were, why we're there. We also had a group of current farm users that came, and they set up spots all around the room, and the public were invited to come and have individual conversations with them, so people would have a chance to learn more about what was going on at the farm while we were there. And then we also introduced our community survey, which was open for, I believe, about 2 months surrounding that open house. We wanted to get feedback, and I'll go through a little bit more about the survey in a little bit, but we had the survey, and then after that we had a period, we had a workshop in the spring of 2023 where we took all of the feedback that we received from the open house, the survey, and some other engagement elements, and we provided that, shared with the steering committee, so that they would have all the information that we could provide them. And we had an alternative development workshop where they created, based on a list of programmatic elements and cost recovery options that we came up with, and more about that in a little bit, but they put alternatives together. And then we took the summer and fall of 2023 and last year to put together our draft sustainability plan after reviewing all of that same information and all of the alternatives that were put together by the steering committee. We shared that plan with the steering committee in December of 2023, reviewed that in person with them first week of this year in January, and move forward to our second open house where we presented the draft plan to the community, and that was January 25th. And we had another comment period, which we actually had a continuous comment period throughout the entire duration of the project. But we took all of that information and made a few minor changes to the plan and presented that to the Park Advisory Board, I believe it was last week. And they unanimously decided to recommend that we move the plan forward to the County Council, and that'll be our next step. But we're kind of in between those stages, and so I'm here wanting to explain to you what the sustainability plan is, because it was a different group of HPAT members who heard about this for the last 2 years, except for Sandy, of course. So that's what we're here to talk about tonight.
You know, I was thinking, even if you take that to the County Council, some of those councilors are going to be different than the people that were trying to get you to be less dependent on the general fund years ago.
Well, we have three new councilors. I don't know that the idea has changed about the general fund, but, but there are definitely three new councilors from when we first went to them in 2022. So we had a multi-layered public engagement strategy. We hired a consultant, Consular Engineering, and they helped us put together the strategy for plan development, and I'll kind of hit some highlights here. If you want to talk about any of these steps in more detail, I'm happy to do so, but I'm going to try to move quickly because there's a lot of information. The first of which is that we had a stakeholder engagement communication plan where we basically sent out a lot of emails, being upfront and transparent about the work that we were doing, about the meetings that we were having, about what was discussed at those meetings, and letting people know when they would have a chance to observe the meetings or participate in the public process by coming to open houses or participating in the survey. So we've done a lot of work to try to communicate where we are in the process with the stakeholder group, which has grown to over 250 people that we message on a regular basis. We also, as I said, we developed the steering committee. We had six meetings total with the steering committee. The committee was made up of Matthew. We had Teresa Meyer, who's a Park Advisory Board member. We had an HVAC member, which was Rob Freed, and Sandy with Binship for Rob, but he was unavailable, so they were both great additions. We had represented from the we had Christine, I don't want to stick over Christine, from WSU Extension. We had a Clark Conservation District member, Northeast Hazeldale Neighborhood Association, the Hazeldale Salmon Creek Business Association, Vancouver School District representative for their career and technical program. We had a representative from LULAC, and also from the NAACP, and the Visit Vancouver Law, the tourism folks. So we had a number of people who participated over the course of
How about the West Hazeldale Neighborhood Association?
Isla Westergaard was, she participated as a member of the Hazeldale Salmon Creek Neighborhood. But she is with the West Hazeldale Neighborhood Association. We also had the two open houses that I discussed earlier. We had 70 to 80 attendees at both of those meetings, so it was a pretty good turnout. We had the community survey, which we had 1,130 individual responses, or individuals that provided responses to that survey. We had community leader interviews that Consular Engineering conducted. Those were 10 different groups that they reached out to. One of them was Rocky. We also had the Evergreen School District. We had Christine's supervisors, person Michael Gaffney from WSU, the Clark Howlett's Farm Bureau, and a number of other organizations, and also the Cowlitz Tribe. Patty Kinswood Geyser, the chairwoman, participated in an interview. We had invited them to be on the steering committee, but they just didn't have the manpower to staff that. So it was great that we were able to get an interview from them. And also the Vancouver Farmers Market, and a couple other organizations that were interviewed. And we had a continuous public comment period. We didn't want to shut people out if they had things that they wanted to share with the steering committee or with the county. We collected all of those and provided those to the steering committee over the duration of the project. And we actually only had 21 comments for the comments that we received. but some of those were rather lengthy, and so we made sure not to share those with the steering committee. Seamless transition. Okay. So now we're going to look at the plan a little bit with you. I'm not going to go through the public process that's here because I've already kind of gone through that. But the plan does include our some context surrounding Heritage Farm. We took a look at the cultural and historical information. There's several paragraphs in there about that. We looked at current uses. We addressed, we went through the past planning studies, those that were provided to the farm, I'm sorry, to the steering committee, and those that we reviewed as a part of the plan preparation. And that included that WSU Metro report, our the master plan update from 2020, our park recreation and open space plan, because that includes Heritage Farm as a part of that. And we looked at the the application to the National Registry of Historic Places. There's a lot of information about the history of the site on there, which is really helpful. And a number of other documents that are all, and they're all listed and kind of summarized in the plan. We also conducted a financial analysis that looked at county expenditures and volunteer contributions. We're upfront and honest, some of our steering committee members weren't all that pleased with the level of detail that we provided in our financial analysis, but we were able to share that Parks and Lands averages about $170,000 a year in expenses to operate Heritage Farm. That's outside of WSU's contract and outside of what it takes to maintain that. This is specific to, I think, Lane Zane's salary and some from our facilities who come to maintain, help us meet facilities group, who help us maintain the building.
How many years has that average taken over? Like the last 10 years?
We looked at 5 years.
Okay.
So actually that number doesn't include facilities.
Oh,
the facility work is not. It's the farm work, so it's primarily salary from an individual.
Mm-hmm.
There was a capital project, was an irrigation update.
Yeah, I was just curious because inflation's making everything go up.
Yeah, it is. So it's not a lot of money when we look at all the other budgets, but every dollar in general fund is scrutinized. And so,
did the council unhappy with this $170,000?
I'm not saying that.
Okay.
So I think when I got here, the interpretation is that all of the funds that are spent at the farm for all programs were lumped into one number. And so it appeared that there was a much larger dollar in a sense to manage the farmland. And so part of what we did was try to separate that out to clarify is that we have different pots of money that get put, or for programs are put into one bucket, and we pulled that apart where really what we're spending to operate the farm is $170,000. There's a lot more money that is there to benefit other programs that benefit the community. And so part of this sustainability plan was to kind of tickle that out so that we weren't talking about other things that were part of this program.
So we also looked at volunteer contributions. This information is updated beyond what was in the last draft of the sustainability plan. This information will go into the plan that goes forward to the council in April. But in 2023, there were just around 15,000 hours of, or just under 15,000 hour volunteer hours that are valued at 300. Oh, this is, I did not make it.
450.
Sorry. There were 14,000, yeah, valued at 450,000. Dollars. We had 130,000 pounds of produce that were donated to the Clark County Food Bank at a value of just under $300,000. And that went to support about 200,000 folks in Clark County. And then an additional $303,000 in private contributions, and that goes entirely to support farm programs because the funds, the $170,000, doesn't go to manage those farm programs.
Quick question, and you may have just answered it by saying the $170,000 doesn't go to do anything with this, but the seed, the starts, is that I see contributions, but what are the cost offset, or has that been offset?
So the season starts as an accounting cost, that is the programs out there, their costs do that. And so we leased out the greenhouses through Master Cowardice Foundation, others. And so those starts and those things occur there. And so,
so there's no cost.
We're like a field of dreams.
They have to find each program or leasee gets their own product.
Okay, so there's no cost from the county and, you know, people.
No, that's part of the private contribution.
Seed is.
Yeah, so somebody might donate the seeds or the seed starts, or there might be cash donated to the food bank or to PIC or to whoever. So that's part of those outside contributions.
Very good. That's great.
So those programs benefit gardeners and farmers. They benefit food insecure families, students, and kids that are involved in the juvenile justice system, and also local youth groups. So there's a lot of people in the community that are benefiting from those programs, and they help enhance leadership, job skills, self-sufficiency in the community. And so we're really thankful for that. And this information comes from the Farm Advisory Team from Sandy. So we really appreciate her being able to share that with us. Right, so we also, the plan also includes a site analysis where we looked at environmental and use zones. We looked at topographic constraints, fallow land, surrounding land use, and agricultural production feasibility. There's three use zones that were identified. The first one is the agricultural operations and support areas. It takes up about 19 acres. The second one are the fallow land slopes, that are less than 15%. And those are about 37 acres total, and then encumbered land takes up about 23 acres. That might be like wetlands and things like that, but we can't really use fully. We know that the site has steep slopes on the southern portion, and that does limit crop types. It doesn't eliminate crop types, but it makes it possibly more difficult and more costly to farm those. There might be specialized equipment for working on that type of slope. We know that the areas around Cougar Creek, on the north end of the farm, where we're going to have the wetland restoration project, some of those have been inactive or unused for a number of years, and that can create issues with weeds and soil conditions or nutrient conditions, soil nutrient conditions. We know that farming in an urban area for surrounding land use comes with its own set of limitations. They're kind of limited on what type of farming you can have there. Maybe it's not appropriate to have a hog farm, or maybe it's not appropriate to have a lot of cattle. And then as well, the pool of farmers who may be interested in leasing the site could be smaller than what you might have in a more rural area, because it's harder to connect to another farm, or it's harder to get in and out of the farm just because of the urban use around the area.
Can you get irrigation all the way through the whole farm or not? It's just up at the front.
So the top of the hill currently is a line, I believe, when it goes down. We don't have all the laterals for everything, but
yep.
We have almost every acre that's leased currently is irrigated. I think there's a couple of acres in the lake that aren't.
That slope in the path, anyways, was raspberries on the slope. That was the WSU had raspberries. I mean, it was commercial picked. So all of those kinds of things in Clark County were commercial picked until the processing plants left. And then everybody started selling out their farms. But so that's what we had on it.
We know that the property is high value agricultural site because of the high quality soils, the Hillsboro loam that you talked about earlier, and the fact that there is a bit of water available on site. So, now we'll take a look at the alternatives. So as I mentioned back in the spring of 2023, the steering committee met and conducted a workshop. We had a laundry list of programmatic elements that we put together. Those are things like farmers markets and leased land space. We got those from the master plan itself. We got that from survey results, comments that we received from the council, from the steering committee themselves. We put together a list that they could use. We also had a list of cost recovery options that came from those same sources for them to consider. We just used a very basic formula of your programmatic elements plus your cost recovery elements or your alternative. And we took those alternatives and reviewed them as we developed the draft plan. And we narrowed it down to three alternatives, but in actuality, all of the, there was a lot of consistency in the alternatives that the steering committee put together. They self-selected into six small groups, and there was consistency in the elements that were selected, both for cost recovery and programmatic elements. And so we narrowed those down and kind of jammed them into alternative three, which ends up being our preferred alternative, and I'll go through that in a little bit. But we wanted to make sure there was interest from the steering committee in continuing to have alternative one, which we would call same-same, which is a very little change. It's continuing to operate the farm in the manner that it is now. However, we would still be implementing the master plan, and so it would still involve increased public access. There are a lot of current farm partners that are expressing an interest in continuing to operate the farm as it is with little or no change. And this alternative follows in that spirit, but it does, like I said, incorporate some of those other modifications, which do include revenue generation that planning staff has come up with. The alternative overall would fall short of meeting both the financial and public access goals that were set forth by the council for the development of this plan. But there was still interest in considering it as part of the alternative analysis. Alternative two is management by a non-governmental organization or nonprofit. A few members of the steering committee were interested in this alternative, but this would require us to issue a request for proposals so that we could seek selection of a nonprofit that would operate the farm. But the option was discounted by a majority of the steering committee because there was the unknowns that come with having that RFP and making sure that we're finding an organization that can that has the financial backing that could operate the farm in a manner that meets the guiding principles, which we could go through in a little bit if you'd like, from the master plan, and not utilize a county subsidy because that would not be available. Alternative three, as I kind of described, is an amalgamation of the six alternatives that the self-selected steering committee groups came up with for programmatic and revenue generation options. This alternative proposes inclusion of a fully open public access facility so that Heritage Farm can function more like an agriculturally focused community park. Recreation elements like the public access trails would be separated from active agricultural areas through purposeful design, most likely including fencing or other methods of separation. And then those operational expenses would be primarily shifted to the Metropolitan Park District fund that we have, and we use that fund to pay for neighborhood parks and community parks. So it kind of opens up another resource and would offset the cost that goes now to the general fund. So this doesn't entirely doesn't take the money away from the county, but it does offset it off of the general fund, so it's still a county expense. Yes.
So when we look at the other examples around the nation that through the Metro study they looked at, as well as we looked at, we identified that most of the models out there are heavily subsidized. So there isn't these sort of agricultural oases that are self-sufficient and generate tons of money because of all the access and programming and educational elements. And so we took that to heart in regards to looking at this alternative that some would call it shifting money, they would call it money, but it's dedicated funding. It isn't fighting for other general funds. And it opens up the ability to look at some other development elements in the future that, again, have that same, different strengths, but it's different, so it's not competing against the same stuff.
If you got those trails put in back there, how much money do you think you'd get from the Parks Department to maintain this? Just enough to make them?
So we're the same? Yeah. So hi, I'm Rocky. I'm the Parks Department, and I run the farm. Okay. So we're the same. So it's just that we have a dedicated fund to the Greater Clark Park District, which is a dedicated levy that for this area that may be able to utilize those funds for community park inside that boundary. So we would be able to, depending upon how we carve up the farm, if we're looking at the whole thing, we would be paying for all of those
operational costs through the MPD, mm-hmm. the GCPD.
So when you say dedicated levy, you are referring to that you have funds in existence as opposed to going for additional funds from the public?
Correct.
Perfect.
And that levy always gets reviewed. It could go back out for a levy lid lift, which is raising that fund that would go out to a public vote, but it is an existing, it's been in existence since 2005.
So right now, with the preferred alternative, and so is that the one that you're thinking of, you, my own personal feeling, the alternative two is not acceptable, alternative one, it'd be nice for them to continue, but it's amalgamated into alternative three, right?
So the, yeah, the, really the difference is we're just utilizing a different funding resource.
Right.
So all three of them, our master plan and that vision and that implementation is the same. So the blueprint is the same for all three. It's just who's operating the farm? Is it a third party? Which then we have to figure out what's that access like. So does public access change if I'm wanting to rent something or take over something? You know, I've got all these programs on there, so the more limitations I put on someone's going to take it over, the fewer people interested. Because now I have 70 acres, now I have 20 acres that I can actually make money off of or do for programming. And the first one is just very similar to the third, it's just that we're staying with the general fund. And we're still going to be looking at
right, you guys incorporated
are in being looking at our fee structure and those other things that we have in regards to operation plan. So that's coming forth. And regardless, A, B, or C, we're still going to be doing those things to continue to function like Mount Vernon. So Mount Vernon is a research station that WSU manages, and they have a fee structure and et cetera. And so that was a model that was used as an example for us to utilize as we consider our fee structures and move forward. So,
this may not be the appropriate time, Lindy, because I recognize you still have more presentation to make, but since we are to operational alternatives, maybe it's a good time to ask my questions. You mentioned recommendations, changes to be made to operations. Could you specify maybe one or two of the major changes to be made? And then that may go hand in hand with, I also heard you say cost recovery options, and I would just be interested in what particularly popped up when that was
reviewed.
I'll go through the cost recovery, because I have the next slide that talks about the alternative overall, but if you want to talk about the operational.
And so operationally is what we talked about earlier in regards to having 15 people instead of one to kind of help do it. That's the biggest operational change. And who's paying that money for the time there?
It's a lot of it will have to do with, as an example, our irrigation specialist that we have here on staff with parks. In the past, he's been called anyway, and he's not supposed to be working at the farm. The billing of it was fishy. And now we can justify sending staff from other areas. It's a lot easier funding-wise to say, hey, we just spent 100 hours at the farm than it will be going forward with the general fund. If that makes any sense.
So the changes are really in the operations side and just how they are processed.
Yes. Additionally, in operation, it gets into cost recovery as well as that our leases will have an acre rate that's going to be consistent. If someone needs work done that's leasing it, depending upon what type of entity they are, there may be where we do it for no cost, or there's a cost or rate that we charge them for that. And so those are some of those operational things that we'll be changing as well.
Thank you.
In addition, we had WSU had a lot of equipment there. It still does potentially. I know some of it's moving around and being surplus. And we had our tractor, and it was sort of viewed as one pool of equipment and moved around and said, hey, let me know if I get this wrong. And we got our hands slapped because it's a risk for us to repair someone else's equipment and for someone to use our equipment. based off of all the liabilities. Highware America, we litigate, we have all these things. And so we got told that we couldn't do that any longer, that there was gift of public fund issues and liability issues. And so that's another constraint or issue that we're met with. And I think this is up, so I will shut up and let you take over.
Thank you.
Okay, so this is a snapshot of our alternative three. We've broken the programmatic elements into agricultural, which is red heading, and then we have educational and recreational in purple and in orange. So I'm not going to read all of these for you, but I will give you some highlights. For agricultural programmatic elements, the first one we have is WSU Extension. We made sure, just like we have to implement the master plan, we made sure that WSU was going to be a part of any alternative that was considered, because that was not part of our scope. Some of these are, a lot of these are already happening on the farm, which, like community gardens, agricultural lease space, research space, food production for our underserved communities. We're all very familiar with the food bank and the work that is going on there. You'll see farm stand and vendor lease space, which would be new. And that is not, if I had gone through the survey data in a little bit more detail, I would have told you that a lot of people from the public really want us to have a farmer's market. A heritage farm, it seems like it makes sense. But in consideration of the interviews that we did with the local food farmer's markets, we got some guidance that the steering committee considered that there's really not enough farmers to support an additional farmer's market in this area. And so that was not moved forward. We have horticulture education program, which we already have. The master plan already includes the multi-use building for private and public events, all that kind of flex space, the farm events program, things like that. And then near and dear to Sandy's heart, I don't want to leave off the farm table program, because she's mentioned that every chance she's been able to. For educational, we just have two, and they go hand in hand, the community outdoor classroom and also school district programming. The community outdoor classroom is something that we're already talking about with WSU, trying to help move that forward. And then school district programming, there's this vision, this continued vision of having all the school children in the district to be able to visit the site, get to learn a little bit more about where their food comes from, and hopefully encourage them to keep an interest in that throughout their lifetime. And then what usually makes people cringe that are involved in the farm are the recreational programmatic elements. But like we talked about earlier, the community trails that are open to the public, that was already part of the approved master plan. And then the children's play area is something that the steering committee did not necessarily support, but it's something that our planning added to this, because we believe that any time that you construct a play area and a family can come visit it and they can see what's going on around them, they're more likely to come and check out more about what's going on at the farm and maybe become involved in some of the programs. So we would really like to see that move forward with our public access improvements. And then we have listed the cost recovery elements that folks brought forward and their alternatives. We still have the general fund. And then that Metropolitan Parks District Fund, which we talked about, the alternative funding source. Rocky touched on lease agreements and I think the fee for farm services. Friends of the Farm, I don't think they're not here tonight, but in talks with them, they're really excited for us to get this sustainability plan approved, and so they can move forward and have a better strategy for fundraising for the farm. We have Educational Institute Partnership, which kind of one of those things, we're not really sure if that's going to work out, because if we read the newspaper, we know a lot of the school districts around here are lacking in funding, but there might be opportunities with colleges or maybe with private schools. Grants, if we are to identify a portion of the park, a portion of the farm as a community park, that could open us up to additional funding sources through the Recreation and Conservation Office, which is a Washington State granting agency, and they do have some agricultural grants, but they also have a majority of those are recreation based, and we can use that for any area that's publicly accessible. Talk about donations and revenue percentage from sold items. And then the last one,
As a point of order, we're nearing the end of our allotted time.
I'm sorry.
I just need a motion to a continuance.
I make a motion that we continue.
I second.
Okay.
All approved?
Approved.
Thank you.
I thought it went to 5:30 anyway.
Well, it says 5 on here. That's why I'm just making sure.
Oh, okay, I'm sorry.
In case, you know, someone had a final, or, you know, what is that, the big 16? Like, I think it was final four.
We're still in the round of 16.
Not so simple.
She's talking.
Okay, so everyone needs to mourn BYU's loss today.
And then the last one on here is the Vancouver Clark County leaf litter composting and sale program, which we can talk about in a little bit if you like, but I'm going to move on to the next step. This was something that was not necessarily heavily supported by the steering committee, but it is an opportunity to offset some of the cost expenses that we have on the farm, and so we'd like to have the option to consider this more.
So I would just like to put something out there and in the whole mix that doesn't typically show up a lot of times on the public side. Although my claim to fame, I was a founder with Phyllis Goldhammer for Dozer Day. And one of the things that I understand, you know, people come in from the parks, they buy park passes, and again, it's all of that same pool of money. But to, you know, sometimes I say it's easier to make money than reduce spending. That one of the considerations that, again, I don't want to mix up the whole thing, but I just want to appropriately place the comment that to have something such as a, you know, it wouldn't be called Dozer Day, but it might be a farm tractor day, and you have all of the components, you have all of the same people who are involved. And I don't want to steal thunder from a private foundation now, because now it's operated by the Nutter Foundation. But when it was with the Parks Foundation, it grew too large for the Parks Foundation, and that's why it transformed over to a private foundation. But in the very early stages, early years, it brought in about $100,000 in revenue. And that was done, it initially was one day. And then we expanded to a preview night for special guests, and then it became a weekend. But I would just like to make that suggestion because, you know, nothing against all of the things going on in parks, but there is nothing like that where people can come and get educated and have fun. And it also checks off the box about the play area. You would have a play day. And I do understand something had been held in the past, and I said, well, how much money did it bring in? And it's like, oh no, we didn't charge any money, but.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I think one that I think illuminates our interest with the foundation for the farm and looking of how we can activate that to do something like that. We have a limited number of bodies to do the programming and the administrative element. That's a.
You would have been amazed. Phyllis Goldhammer and I, you know, and I'm sure you know Phyllis, the way to get it done is to reach over to other groups, but then also to, you know, Pave makes farm tractors, and, you know, we know other people who work at other farm equipment places that the everyday person doesn't get to know, and those people will bring funds, especially if you're through a foundation. So I just wanted to interject that.
No, I think that's a great idea, and I'm just illuminating that if we brought in the Farm Foundation is one of those activators for something like that. And what I found is, hi, I'm the government, come help me. I don't get as much as if, hi, I'm a citizen or a nonprofit.
I had to go on behalf of a company to our competitors or to Jerry Nutter's competitors, and they were, why would we work with you? And of course, people do want to get on board. So it's a conversation,
yeah,
but you
like
folks
it.
Are very vetted in conversation, but I think it would merit some looking into.
And that does fit in with our farm events.
And the Friends of the Farm have talked about those kinds of events and helping sponsor those. So that's still on their agenda.
Good. I would love to be a part of that.
Very much on task of how I'm thinking about this too. I'm seeing all of these things that you have there, but I'm seeing a whole expansion in each of these categories. And that would be one of them. These big events that are, you know, I mean, CCCU has had a lot of big events, and all it takes is, you know, stuff online and a little bit of advertising and something on the in the newspaper, and it's amazing how many people show up. And, you know, Clifford's Press is willing to donate, but here, you know, you can have entry fees, you can, like you say, have different things that people pay a little bit for or something, and it's amazing how much you can collect for that. I see on this, which I think is a really good plan, but it needs expansion in order to bring in revenue. I see on the agricultural element one, you've got a, that sort of overpowers some of the others, but like the playground, children gravitate to the field. I mean, you've got a playground for kids, but if they know somebody's out there with a tractor or they're doing something out there, they gravitate to watch that, to see that, to be there. And that brings their parents there. But what are their parents going to do?
And, you know, and that's where we're thinking of whether it's a trail or those other things. I call them grazing events. And so someone's coming around and they get that interest, that spark. Now, of course, there's a concern from our farm operators about safety, about having the public out there around the tractor. When I grew up, that wasn't an issue. You know, well, if you get run over, you get run over. Now we're in a whole other world. But
you understand.
But again, I think there's a great way from an educational perspective of interpreting notes that explore those cool little black and white signs to tell you what you're growing, all those little things that hopefully then stimulate a QR code reading about a class or a community garden plot or whatever it is. You know, those things that got you to do the composting program or you to be within the Master Gardeners elements, et cetera, et cetera. Those, you know, as we need opportunities to get a little burr or those little things that get caught in your socks.
Hustle burr.
Yeah, those little things to then keep people coming back and opening up that awareness. And I think what I believe is we have a lot of great things happening at the farm. We just don't do a good job of connecting it all together to show that we have a full calendar. There's a lot of stuff going on. But if you go to our website today, there's one thing happening this month.
Yeah.
I'm going to say BS. There's a lot more happening there this month, but that's all that we put on our calendar. And so that's part of it. And we have a staffing issue and a prioritization of that. We were focused on running the tractor instead of those other things. And so I'm excited that we're right now, we're neutral. It feels like we've been in neutral for a long time planning. And planning's awesome, do a lot of it. But sometimes we just gotta get it in gear and actually activate and do so that we can have that event. We can have another event. We can bring in these other things. We can see, pilot things and see if it works. And if it doesn't, you know, that's why we're here. It's a farm, you know, just till it over and we start over, do something else. And
can I ask one more question? So I know you know parks. We have great parks. We all love the parks. Who is bringing there's a strong farm history, you know. Until the Roosevelt era when Social Security came in, that farm was crucial to the survivalship and to the development of Clark County. And it's a major historical piece. What person or persons, or is it us, that will help to protect the merits of that differentiator, just as, you know, no park is the same. There are parks with snow, and I'm being general because I'm a farmer.
I think there's a lot of people at the table to continue to move forward that this asset remains as it is, and it continues to be have merit for the community. So, You all play a different part. Everyone has a different experience, a different role, background that will help us move forward the farm. We have historical designations that preserve the asset and create problems for us to turn it into something else. We have our master plan. We have our anchor tenant on site, WSU Extension Services, and their programs. We have all of our leases and those people doing work there. And we have the community at large who are very engaged. Our turnout was 2,500 on our survey, online survey, which is for Hazeldale Park, we had 400 or 500 people. So, and if we're doing something wrong, people tell us. Sometimes we're doing something right, but people feel it's wrong. But still, it feels that we're being told, or you're being told, or you're going to be told that we're doing something wrong, and then that's where we have our discussion. And ultimately, it's county councilor's responsibility as the policymakers for the county.
I applaud the effort. I just think it is very complex.
I'm going to say that the master plan, which we, anything that we implement at the farm has to follow a master plan. It has a set of guiding principles in it that were developed. I think they're the same as the ones that were in the initial master plan, and those sit over here at the top of the, or eight of them. And I encourage you to look at them. But anytime we're developing something, or anytime there's a new potential farm partner that wants to come and lease space there, the HVAC has to look at those guiding principles before they might suggest that it's appropriate to bring that farm partner on, or for us to proceed with development or something. It needs to match and align with those guiding principles.
Perfect. On the educational program elements, I've been thinking quite a bit about the fact that you can educate people on preservation of food, all of those kinds of things, and have different classes that people pay for to have this done, you know, to be shown how to do these things. There's so many of these groups that are out there doing this, like the quilting groups and those kinds of things. Those were all very much part of the history of this farm. So just an outdoor classroom or school district.
We're already working on it. Yeah.
So we have another building in our master plan in the northeast corner that is a program. It has a lot of ideas. Is it an industrial kitchen? Is that the right term? There's an idea.
Commercial kitchen?
A commercial kitchen in it, where there's a demonstration and a farm and table opportunity. There's talk about additional classrooms. There's a lot of different ideas in there. So we have a reserved space up there right here.
So you're going to expand on the education?
Oh, yeah. Significantly. There's a plan that we had a meeting. It's in a pretty, I'd say, rough, extremely rough stages right now. But we had a meeting, WSU, it's actually Christine's project, a little earlier today. And a design firm and our design team, our planning team, that's going to be expanded exponentially, probably over the next couple of years.
Oh, good.
That'll be one of the first things that gets done, most likely, just due to the way the funding is rolling and the ease of the pitch, basically.
She shared she already has folks that are ready to use it. It's just that we don't have the infrastructure to support what's our
And I think we view the sustainability plan as an iterative process, a framework that provides guidelines as we're moving forward. And we don't think we try not to have to be prescriptive, that we had to have two yellow hats and one blue hat or we couldn't move forward. And because you know what happens with fashion, you know, next year it's going to be black and brown. And so we wanted to make sure that.
I know, it's black and white.
Yeah.
Speaking of moving forward. So these are the next steps that are listed towards the end of the plan. And they're longer, a little bit more descriptive in the plan, but I'll kind of summarize them here, and I'll hit some highlights. Numbers 1 and 3 are kind of in relation to one another, improve relationships with existing farm partners, and to build on the trust that's developed during the development of the sustainability plan. When we first started the sustainability plan, we had a lot of hard conversations. We did a lot of listening. Having hard conversations throughout the plan development, but it feels like things are changing, that people are understanding that we're moving, trying to move forward more together rather than in opposition, and we want to build on that as we move forward. Number 2 is to improve inclusion and equity in farm access to historically underrepresented populations in our community. That's something that we started here with the sustainability plan. We tried to draw groups into the steering committee, and it's something that we're going to include in everything that we do moving forward, making sure that we're bringing in the voices of the community that can use the program that maybe aren't, that those voices need to be elevated. Two of them, Rocky's already kind of touched on, and that's that land lease program and then the fee-for-service program. And then we've also touched on analyze the current cost sharing and operations relationships. How can we make some differentiation in our operations process to help leverage other resources within the county? And then 8 and 9 are connected, as well as those are to develop a first phase of public access improvements and to improve or to consider purposeful design in the creation of those and increasing public access. So we want to make sure that we're keeping those kids out of those active ag areas, keeping them where they're supposed to be. And part of that is that we started a kind of a listening session with the current farm users so we can start the dialogue of the concerns that they have. We can try to validate those concerns as we get into the beginning stages of improving public access or creating public access. Most likely the public access is going to start from the south end of the park, Hazeldale Park, and head up towards the cemetery and to a viewpoint at the top of the hill. And then later on, after the wetland restoration project, that's when we're going to start looking more closely at the northeast corner of Hazeldale Farm and bringing folks in on that eastern portion of the farm. And then the last one is to explore additional revenue options. We want to make sure we get going on that so we can find out if there are indeed options for us to, like the leaf litter program that I kind of touched on a little bit. Maybe there's something that will help us offset some of those expenses that we have. All right, and I just have one more slide. And that's the next steps in plan development. So it's a little bit different than the implement action plans next steps, but our next step is to go to the Clark County Council. We have a work session scheduled on April 3rd with them. There's not a chance for a public comment at that meeting, but we're going to present the draft plan to them. We expect that we'll get some comments from there. Hopefully they are overall supportive of the progress that we've made, and then after we hopefully get their support, we will end up scheduling a hearing with them. Where they would adopt the plan, and at that meeting, there would be a chance for public comment after we presented the plan again to the council. And then this last dot here is to begin implementation, but in reality, we've been working on that more recently, building those relationships, starting to look at public access improvements, and just making those operational changes that are getting us going in the right direction. That's all I have.
Good.
Thank you. Very good job. Thank you for listening to me. I'm probably not going to get cut off here, but Mr. Easton, I just want to let you know, I think I've included you guys on my email list, but we do have an open house on the 27th for Hazeldale Community Park. And I only invite you because that property is a part of the Clark County Poor Farm District. It's connected and shares a large border with Hazeldale Hartford Heritage Farm. And so if you're interested in joining that, it'll be online and it'll be in person at Minnehaha Elementary School from 6 to 8 p.m. And if you go, just Google Hazeldale Community Park, you'll find information about that event, or if you email me directly, and I can reach out to you. But I appreciate you on my email list for it.
The date, one more time?
It's the 27th of March from 6 to 8 p.m.
I looked it up already. I forgot where Minnehaha schools were.
No,
just west of St.
So let's see, next we have Sandy.
All right, I think you each got my handouts. There's three of them. One of them is a Heritage Farm summary report, and then there's a financial status for 2023, and then a five-year chart. This is something that the previous Heritage Farm Advisory Group did. We've done it for 5 years now, so we have a five-year track record. At one point, we kind of wanted to know what was going on and trying to collect all the information about, like, what's going on and what's the value of the produce and how many pounds of produce and how many volunteers are out here. And so we thought that was important information to try to share, and that there's more, as Rocky had said, there's more activity going on at the farm than one knows. And people say, I drive by and there's nothing going on there, and yet there is lots going on there. There's a lot that comes out of that and a lot of impact with the community. So I'm not going to go through all of this, but Lindy had shared a little bit about in 2023, there was almost 1,200 volunteers that provided about 1,400 hours that had quite a monetary value. Lisa asked where I got the hourly rate for that, and it changed over years. I use a national average for volunteer rates rather than the Washington State one, because it's just a national average. So that's where I get that. The amount per pound for produce is a little more difficult to find, but I tried to track that kind of nationally a little bit. And I found that depended on whether it was a squash or a cucumber or a tomato. So I kind of had to just average it out somewhere.
The important thing is to be consistent between each year.
Yes,
so you
right.
Have a good comparison.
Right. So this year, the monetary value of the produce was nearly $300,000. And this produce went to help alleviate hunger in youth and adults. And it went to 40 distribution sites through the Clark County Food Bank. And they do the majority of the donation as a food, but there are lots of other leasees, I'm going to try to use the new term, leasees on the farm that donate food to either the food bank or to other distribution sites. Also gets donated to schools and school food banks so that youth and family get extra food as well. So there's a lot of different distribution sites that this food goes to, and not just through the food bank. Food bank's great, but there's a lot of other places, and I think we need to recognize that there's many other places that get food that is grown at the farm. The five-year data shows that nearly, I turned it into tons. I was just curious to know how many tons of food. And so I had to search on the tonnage, but nearly 200 tons of produce has been grown in the last 5 years on the farm, and probably serving upwards of 1 million Clark County residents. And that's a big deal to me. I think that's really big that we say we grow a lot of food there, but where does it go? And it goes back out into our community. It goes off the farm, and it feeds nearly 1 million people over 5 years' time, and I think that's it.
Which, you know, I think is that our to its original formation as a poor farm, it was feeding the poor in a different way, mm-hmm. It was supporting them in a different way, but that still is being carried forward.
It still is, yeah. I would say a majority of it does go to alleviate hunger in low-income families, but it also is teaching people how to grow their own food in their own yards. So, like any of us around this table, we could learn techniques about growing our own food and how can we feed ourselves with locally grown food. Now, there's nothing wrong with commercial food, but the locally grown is a little more nutritious, but it's also a little bit cheaper to do. And what happens if the freeways get cut off and we can't get deliveries in? And that's happened when there's been floods and so on. So knowing how to get locally grown food and supporting our local farmers is really important. The research that goes on at the farm to help support local farmers so that they can continue to grow food and grow new kinds of foods. Justin's doing research on mushrooms right now. There's been some barley and some other kinds of grains that have been grown there. So trying to expand what can be grown in the local area. One of the biggest impacts, I think, is different than just feeding our family. I mean, that's kind of the goal of a farmer, and that's kind of what the initial deal was on the farm, was to grow produce and feed families. But the other kinds of outcomes that come from people who interact on the farm, it's stress relieving. It's quiet. We found that the juvenile court system sends juvenile offenders out to do projects. There's a specific garden for the juvenile offenders, and they use it as one of their community service projects. It's actually, I think, still the number one project that they choose to come out there. And they interact with the environment. They find out, they learn how to be a team player. They learn how to work with others. It reduces their anger in that it's quiet and it's peaceful. And they talk amongst themselves. And there's been many of the youth that have come and participated and volunteered, or not volunteered, but came and did their community service there, volunteered to come back and help others on that because they liked it and it was peaceful for them. And it made them kind of control themselves a little bit. So, I mean, that's a big outcome of participating in something at the farm. The community gardens. There's lots of community gardeners there that are learning how and growing their own food on that farm for themselves. And then any extra they have, they donate to the food bank or to other people that need to have the extra food. The Master Composter Recyclers, which you're a part of the group, so you probably know that just this year, they saved 7,000 pounds of food waste to go to the landfill. And that means that there's soil amendments that's trying to improve the soil for the farm, but also for personal gardeners. But it also helps the environment and climate change. And we're all concerned about climate change and what's happening to our weather patterns.
When you say 7,000 pounds from the farm?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so 7,000 pounds.
People like lasagna, tomatoes out there, things like that. You'll have to join the program.
Yeah. Okay. Let me see, what else do I have down here? The Master Gardener Foundation, through their plant sale, they do fund 12 organizations with grant funding. And a lot of, some of those programs are there on the farm that helps them continue the projects in horticulture education, but it also goes out to the to some community organizations or schools, like Hazel Dell Garden gets some of their funds sometimes. And so the money that they raise from the work that they do on the farm goes out into the community to help support, again, horticulture education.
Mother's Day, plant sales, the big event. That's on the calendar, if you look, it's one of the best.
Don't leave your house. You won't get down 78.
Well, they changed it for there is appointments.
It's a by appointment now.
So it is a little bit better from a traffic.
You have two accesses from 68th Street and 78th Street. That
eventually. Well, eventually we'll have two accesses off of 78th because on 25th is... the light would be maybe our more community access with light.
Right. Yeah. But I guess in just all of this, I mean, there's a lot of numbers and figures, and I'd be glad to answer any of the questions that you have. But my bottom line is, and particularly regarding the volunteer hours and the volunteers that come and the outside funding that comes to each of those projects, if it wasn't for that, there'd be nothing going on there. These projects or these leases couldn't be successful. They couldn't do the grand things and grow the amount of food that they do and do the education that they do on the farm if it wasn't for the outside donations, whether it's be grants or donations or equipment or seed starts or whatever. They could not, their projects wouldn't be successful. It'd be hard if there was just one or two people running that 10 acres at the Clark County Food Bank. Manages, or the 2 acres that Partners in Career manages, or the 1 acre that RCS Garden does. If it wasn't for all of the funding and the volunteer time that goes into that, we wouldn't have all of these impacts. We wouldn't have all this food.
So did they ever get a replacement for Larry and Lynn?
Larry's, it's my understanding that Larry's still going to be part of
it. Oh, yes, okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, hi.
The new Larry.
Yeah.
So I think over 5 years, the value of the volunteer time, the produce, and the outside donations is $4.5 million. And that's a lot of investment in the farm from our community to have the impacts in the community. And I'm pleased and happy with the work that our group has done in the last 5 years to put this together. And
I agree with what you say, like the average person driving by, they never think that that was being done over there.
Right. Right, and Rocky had said, you know, we don't share this, we don't, it's a marketing thing because there's lots going on and there's a lot of outcome that comes from it.
Marketing. That's why I
have these here. Oh boy, oh my gosh, don't get going. So what are the technical services availability, making YouTube, site, television, production, communications capacity at the county that the parks can access? And let me have you answer that if you do bring
something. So before I answer that question, I just want to, all the information that Sandy's been nicely laying out people for the last 5 years, we're now integrating into our leases. So quarterly, it's an expectation for them to report that. If they don't, they put their lease in jeopardy. So it's the carrot and the stick, sort of, but we'll still have to control people. We're not going to keep people off as an data, but at the same time, this data is important for us to tell our story.
And I'm glad to hear that that will continue because I think it's been, and there's pieces that missing. I could think of some other things that we would.
So every year we'll sit down and talk about the budget and what they're planning to do. And every quarter we're asking how many people came and helped, what did you get done, what are you planning to do next? So it's just it's a way for all of us to understand what's going on and get a better pulse of every one of our tenants. That's there doing the different programs and a way to get this data continued.
So what is your advertising capacity? Let me ask it that way.
We have a public information officer.
Oh, I heard the laugh.
So we have a public information for Public Works.
Sure.
And so we have some tools. Yeah, we can create a YouTube video. We have a drone. We have, we utilize is a lot of press releases and staff crackle and pop releases, social medias. I don't do it, so.
So PIOs are good. That's
good. That's kind of right now. And I know WSU has their own things that they do, but we've not congealed all that to kind of focus one marketing plan and sort of have it all.
You know, Comcast offers grants. And I only bring this up because as everyone watched the wonderful documentary that OPB put together on Oregon poor farms.
The difference we run into is I don't believe those grants are, because those were looked into, I believe. Can't get Comcast stuff for a public entity.
But that, again, that's where we're in partnership with the foundation.
Partnerships.
And so I can appreciate that. And I just especially applaud it because the intent initially, you know, especially if you're familiar with that documentary, was when people went to the pork farm, it was anticipated that these people would produce some things, but they were so sickly. They were in such poor health, they were unable to. And so the dream has really been achieved, Sandy, mm-hmm. You know, through this report of this was the intention, and maybe more so than in Oregon, you know, there is a zoo where the poor farm was. And so this is really wonderful work, and I appreciate all of your work. Thank you.
So if down the line you have more questions, just let me know, and I'll be glad to answer.
And I don't see Blair online. We use the pretty much the same schedule we've had historically, so I don't know if we've reached out to Blair.
I asked Blair if he was coming, and he said no. Okay. But I'm on the foundation, so if you want me to, there's not much going on, but a little bit. We're upping our membership drive, and we're going to be at the Home and Garden Show with membership forms and talking about the foundation and what are some opportunities. And we're going to start looking at starting to do some fundraising, and we have what we call like little project pots, for the lack of a better term. We could probably use some help in marketing as well. But where, like, if people wanted to support equipment repair, or somebody wanted to support the youth education or the youth farm tours, or someone wanted to support, you know, another project that's going on, that they could donate directly to that, or they could just donate to the Friends of the Foundation, and then we would consider putting on events. We have talked about doing a harvest festival, like had been done in the past, where it would bring people to the farm, or the farm to table kinds of things. So we've had those conversations, but we're just trying to up our membership drive right now, and trying to get more members and start our big donation drive. We're starting to do a newsletter. We're getting ready to do our second newsletter to talk about things that are going on at the farm. And we send that to the members. So there's a membership where you can be a yearly member, you can be a family member, you can be a lifetime member. So we're starting to include that in the members, because they're like, what are we going to get for our membership fee? And so we kind of
want to keep them updated. Could the link be shared to the group about them?
For the foundation? Sure. I wish I knew it off the top of my head, but I don't.
Is that possible?
I can send it out. I've got everybody's emails. I can send it to you. So that's about all that's, I mean, there's nothing earth shattering at all, but we're still active and trying to up our game now that the sustainability plan is getting finished, and we kind of know what we can try to fundraise for and what the needs are. But I'm sure that this group would have some suggestions for the Friends of the Farm as well. If you have suggestions, we'd be open to any and all of them. That's it.
Even simple sign out there. I mean, nobody even knows it's hardly there. Come on. We need something that tells the public all the time that this is a special place.
Yeah. You know, right now when you drive by, it feels like an institution.
Absolutely.
We got a big razor wire, scary fence that goes around it.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't say come on in.
Yeah, it says, a friendly image.
Amy, wait, Mark, go ahead.
I just want to ask if the parks has any pull that I've given up along 78th Street, but maybe down 68th, since there's so much going on there with Hazeldale Park. I would love to see a designation of, you know,
Old Poor Farm Way, just for a section of road. How hard could it be? It doesn't mean that we have to contact the state and change all the maps. Just a special designation of that would indicate something, and maybe that's not the appropriate word, but if you entered into that corridor, you know, I have tried to say this for years on 78th Street, and I've kind of given up on, but maybe 68th will work because the parks is, you know, there, that it would stop and think, what do you mean, Poor Farm? What is that? And it would just be wonderful.
Because I think that was the name before the road, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was 78th, that was Poor Farm.
It should be a special historical, you know, from one end to another, to just.
Maybe we'll note that and we'll investigate, but I don't know if it's with community development or transportation in regards to what that.
I'll drive up to Olympia for that one.
It just has to be here.
Yeah, county. County.
But if you decide, I mean, it looks to me like you're deciding the thing to open this up to the public, as in associated with the
parks. We're trying to incrementally increase that public access. Yes, physically through.
There will be more notification and indications once we move forward with some of the plan. We have to kind of improve the public access before we promote the public access.
So we're trying to open up access by communicating on our website, the calendar, what's actually occurring. And I think that's going to be a waterfall event, that there's going to be multiple things happening every day. Like Wednesday, there was a training there for green businesses where it was all about the bucket brigade, you know, where you put your food scraps in there instead of going. So there was a training going on there. How do I know that? Because I was there working that day and someone told me. Otherwise, I would have not known that training was there. Should have been on the calendar.
Should have been a sign outside the front of the
building. Yeah, you know, maybe we get a reader board someday and all
that. Yeah, a reader board. That would be perfect.
You know, maybe we get a big thing that goes across the road that says, you know, Heritage Farms, you know, like Vegas, you know.
Park a tractor out front.
Yeah, I agree. I think we have our backyard and our front yard there, so to speak. So we have all of our buildings and control of all of our equipment, sort of the yard that usually you have in the back, you know, it's right there in the front, and that creates a security issue. And so that's definitely a thing to help that reduces that sort of branding. But, you know, getting 15 old tractors out there lined up, you're right, that would, you know, you look across the street, you see that barn with all those old signs on it. I always look at that. Maybe it's just me, but I'm always looking over there going, oh, that sign.
You have a beautiful big building out there that, you know, you could have all sorts of banners, and I'm not going to suggest painting because that might be defacing and take a lot of things.
It's
a federally protected building now under the historical. But, you know, it would be grand to have a big banner. It's a very expensive piece of real estate. Mm-hmm. And it would be great to showcase that.
And we're getting a great return on it.
Public comments. As I mentioned to Amy here before, was not able to. I'm locked out of the network for some reason. After we came back from the M&P meeting. So I don't know if we have any public comments. I don't believe we do. Last time I checked.
So we had one or two emails that had communicated, let's see if I get it right, Lindy, a preference for number one and alternatives, and some voice and concerns about increasing access and safety. So there was two emails associated with that. And then I think we have the public, which are farm partners here, if there is any public comment. You can shoot introduce yourself since I don't have your name and the badge right there.
My name is Matthew. So, Kubank, so farm program coordinator is the title of the Kubank Bay. Transitioning with Linda and Larry, so they're moving out, I'm moving in. Lots of learning here, lots of good opportunities, but just going to pitch and absorb and stay useful and see what I can do.
Welcome aboard.
Any other introduction or comments?
Sure. I'm Kyle Rosland. I'm with the Vancouver Bean Project. We're we've applied to do a native pollinator meadow on the farm. Just wanted to come to the meeting and check it out.
I think you got his proposal, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi, everyone. Christine Perry, the county director from WC Extension, and get to work with these lovely Canada people and be a part of this process.
And then, if there's someone online who would like to raise their hand, if there's any public comments from Chloe or Heather or Judy or Alex. Perfect.
Great. Questions and answers, open forum. Do we have any questions? Anybody popping up in there?
I got a quick question for you. What's greenhouse 7? Which one is that?
It's the one with the 7 on it.
Oh, okay. 7's the new one, isn't it? That was just refurbished.
It's the one that's a little bit shinier than the others.
Yeah, okay.
That's really the easiest way to describe it.
It's the
walk down there.
Is it the most easterly greenhouse?
Is it?
Is it closest to my office on 78th Street?
Yeah, it's the furthest one back.
It's the closest to us right now.
Yeah, as you walk in. That was replaced. It was.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
In danger of smiting someone at any given moment before we were able to get approval to fix it. It's
to ensure transparency of the comments that were submitted electronically. Lindy's offered to. We'll send them to you.
Someone is typing.
Alex. That's a question.
All right.
That's a question.
Oh, here it is.
Oh,
she
isn't. Hello.
Hello.
Yes, Alex.
Question. So I know we're talking about, and I keep on hearing, what can we do for community? How can we involve more, you know, people know about the what's going on at the farm? So I'm a husband and I have a wife and I have 4 kids. So the question is, on any given day, if I come there, let's say today, tomorrow, or any given day, what is there that farm could offer? You know, I would love to have my kids be more educated about this farm. You know, there's a lot of history. And let's say I come tomorrow. What is it that I can learn or my family could learn?
Great, great question. So I think if you went there today, you would be introduced probably to Annette or someone who would with WSU. And you essentially that would be the first line of step. They have a lot of different programs from 4-H to SNAP. Food education, a lot of different programming, master gardeners, there's the county master composters, recyclers program. So there's those programs that you can enroll in. There's classes and other training. Sometimes there's a fee associated with those. So that's sort of the primary introductory. There's also, and I think they're setting up the dates now, a farm tour that allows you to go out there, and it's a curated tour with a master gardener who will walk you and other participants. I believe last year they had a couple that were just focused on the kids. There's also a community garden plots out there. I think there's 70 of them that 88 of them. See, we just added 18, you know, it's like rabbits, they just keep banging. And I think there's a waiting list on that, but you get your name on the waiting list for that program, and you have your own plot that you can utilize to grow in. There's volunteer days where you can, Wednesdays and Saturdays from 9 to noon, where you can come out and volunteer on the for the food bank. There's other programs out there. So that's a good summary there, and I think if you went out to our website and Googled 78th Street Heritage Farm or WSU Extension Service Clark County, those would be the two links from home to kind of look at and kind of get a menu of some of the things going on.
And I think links to the different organizations that offer programs so that you can sign up for.
So his question that I took from his question is that if I bring my four kids out there, what is it that we can do?
Register for a program.
So
and right now there isn't.
He's kind of thinking maybe about his children over what exactly he would, what would be beneficial to his children.
At the moment, you have to check in with the net and they can educate you on programs that they have.
For the children.
Yeah. And right now the thing, 4-H is the first children's program that I'm aware of. I know there's other things that are there, but it's, you're working with one of our partners or lessees programs on site, not with Clark County specifically.
But I think that's where we're at that junction where the Heritage Farm is a farm, and that's what they've been doing, is doing agriculture and growing food, and it's a farm, and there are opportunities to be part of that. Now with the sustainability plan moving on, my take on it is that we're moving to where there would be something for a family to do when they came right to the farm, but we're not quite there yet. So my take on an answer, and again, you guys can tell me it's wrong, but we're in transition. So there, you would find out about things that are going on there and where you might participate, but there wouldn't be something tomorrow that your kids, you and your kids could be involved in, but they're transitioning to that. Is that a good perception?
Yep. I was trying not to say you can't do anything tomorrow, but yes.
Well, yeah, you could, but you can't. You got to be honest.
Does that answer your question, Alex?
Yeah, I hear. Yeah, it's just I kind of often go online and just see what it is there, and there's few people I try to contact, including plot, having a plot and kind of have my family be more educated in how to plant some vegetables. And I applied a few times, and there was maybe expecting at least an email back, saying, hey, you're in line, you're such and spot, and this is how many people in front of you. And I haven't kind of got respond back. So what I'm asking is maybe something more simple. That family comes in and you have maybe a simple brochures, or if I'll would apply for any of the programs, it be a little bit more simpler and maybe a faster response, because on any given day I try to come in and it's it seems like there's programs, but it's kind of for outsider there's maybe communication or not there, not what I mean, or
like that, Alex. It's that is something we are working on. That's kind of where we're saying we're kind of in the transition of really being able to open that up. At the moment, though, if you did walk in to the front desk, somebody there will point you in the right direction in terms of if you want to get your kids into a program or make sure that you are on the list for a plot. Those things, honestly, right now, as it stands, your best bet is to just show up someday and go on in while we try to work out the kinks of our calendar and our scheduling of events and our online presence.
I think if they're comfortable leaving their email address in the chat or something, we can make sure that we follow up with them if they haven't received a response.
What are the hours? Is it open all the time? We have certain days. Is it
The admin building is typically open from 8:30 to 4, or sometimes to 5.
8:30 to 4. Do you have a sign out there that says what the sign hours are?
On the door it says.
Oh, on the door. Yeah. But
and then there's each program has different sort of office hours or open hours. And those people who are part of the program and behind the gate, have a key card to access to get in. And so what I'm hearing Alex say is that it feels exclusive right now, that it's like a country club. You gotta be a member, you gotta know the secret handshake, and that's fair feedback for us as we move forward trying to improve access, whether it's from programming or physical access of grazing around
I think Alex spoke for many people's thoughts about the farm. So I think that was very good feedback.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay. It's a very well said. Kind of feel like it's exclusive, and I'm just speaking as a regular family that lives in the neighborhood and want to be part of it. And I just want to find maybe easier way to be a participant. So thank you.
Thank you.
We've got that email.
Okay. So this is from Mark Lee in Vancouver, Washington. Rufus today, to the Heritage Farm Advisory Team. I support Alternative 1, which he refers to as Enhanced Farm, rather than Alternative 3, which he refers to as AgroPark, as a preferred option for the sustainability plan. Climate resiliency, in particular, the localization and expansion of our emergency food supply to prepare for severe climate events, should be a higher priority than financial sustainability in the development of your plan. County expenses to operate the Heritage Farm, currently around $170,000 per year, are minimal compared to the benefits the farm provides to the community. Alternative 3 also presents security risks by designating Heritage Farm to serve a dual purpose as a farm and a public park. There is already ample opportunity for the public to participate in the farm's gardening, farming, and educational programs. The county should redirect the plan toward Alternative 1 and place a conservation easement on the property. This would be the best way to support the vision of the 2020 master plan. That's the only one I received.
Okay, I thought there was another one, but maybe that went to the planning page.
Well, the way I look at this farm is it's a public entity already. The public is paying for it. The public is paying the taxes or the cost to have it. And I can remember back, I can't remember what year it was, but the county seriously was thinking about selling it to developers. Because of the fact that they didn't want to pay the price to keep it. So I commend the councilors wanting to keep it and to try to find a way to keep it long term. And I think that's great. So opening it up to the public, they're paying for it already. So to set it aside for, you know, that's the way I look at it. I think we don't have enough regional parks. We have one regional park. Maybe we've got two. Regionals.
We have a lot of regional parks.
Where are they?
All over the county.
Not regional.
Yeah. Yeah, so Louisville's Vancouver
regional.
Vancouver Lake. Lake. Lacamas Regional Park. William Clark Regional Park.
How many acres?
11,000.
11,000.
Regional parks and natural areas, and then we have another couple thousand acres of community and neighborhood parks.
Yeah, but so who goes to those parks? I mean,
hopefully
you
do. Apparently,
there's no park because that's my neighborhood.
It sounds like. We'll get you a park, so I won't blame you. I won't blame you for the leftover bonfire and beer bottles.
Oh no.
Take your name off the list.
But these are all different assets that serve the community in different ways.
In different ways, yes. And I think that's exactly what we're talking about here.
And I think that's what we were really trying to figure out from a funding perspective, is that as general funds go up and down, and right now if you look at the six-year forecast, that's a little good. But by utilizing these different resources allows us to insulate it from some of that, and diversifying our portfolio of funding again allows us to have that better stability as times are lean or fat. So
it stabilizes things basically. It effectively, I mean, we talk about how it gives us more resources, but at the end of the day, when the general fund dips, and it will, we will have, it won't affect our operations there, because that's the big fear, and that's what happened. I think that was probably post last recession, they were like, well, we can't manage this. And the big fear would be if we kept things as is, we will run out of money. We will be told to further reduce spending. We're not being given any more money. We should be clear on that. council is not giving us more money. We are finding ways to utilize the money that we have currently within the system to put more of it into the farm.
Is there any way, because the Growth Management Act requires that you preserve agricultural lands within the urban areas, especially if it's prime soil, which it is.
We have a program for that.
But do you, are you, is there some way you can get funding via the state through the Growth Management Act through that?
I don't know about through the, I think there are grants through the state for that, but we have our Legacy Lands program where we get about $2.5 million from property owners in Clark County, in existence since 1985, to acquire properties. And we have an acquisition plan that's identified one or two acquisitions of property. Right now, the focus area is sort of the Ridgefield area, where and we are working with the Farm Trust on one transaction right now, and then we're looking at others. There is some other farmlands that we're looking to acquire, with legacy lands or other funding streams to preserve that into a natural, its natural state. To, you know, and for the farms, we're looking at acquiring the development rights, so an easement over this, just taking development rights to keep that property in the farm status in perpetuity. So,
you see, this one's an urban.
And it is, this is preserved. And, you know, 100 years ago, the same conversation was occurring in 1920, 1923, when the old building burned down. The same discussion was occurring with councilors, should we sell, should we do this? And they made a good decision there. And I believe we are looking at a conservation easement. It's pretty darn protected. We have a land use document or master plan. We have the overlay in regards to the historical. And we are looking at it as a conservation easement over it. What people want is something that's rock solid forever. It ain't out there. There's always a flexibility of changing an easement in the future. So we've gone to council twice, reviewing different options. We're going to go back with that final thing that would preserve it for the things that are consistent with the master plan, which are consistent with the sustainability plan and how it's being used today.
Do we have anything further? I believe that was the end of the comments. And with that, thank everybody for your time tonight, those online as well.
And then our next meeting, we will probably working on the easement or the lease lessee proposal. So we'll have that reviewed. I'll try to get that into our, even though it's late, get that into our schedule. We'll have some sort of training going over some other aspect of the master plan, operations, projects on site, et cetera. Again, to continue to build up our footing. And if you guys have thoughts or ideas in the interim, please let Matt know so that we can, or Amy, or I, so that we continue to build up our agenda and continue to work through onboarding. And I have some questions for you after this, Rachel. Which may be reviewing our bylaws. So that's another thing.
Do you have any prune trees in the orchard there? Do you have an orchard?
We have what they call a heritage orchard. It's kind of an orphan child. I think WSU was looking to get someone to manage it. And I don't know if it has prunes in it.
Prunes?
Yeah, prunes.
Yeah.
Oh, the other one? So the other apple maggot orchard? Okay. Sorry, my own name. That's what that orchard was created for.
So Blair and I have taken upon the pruning and supposedly the management team this year, just because the bank can use the fruit and it's been left untouched for probably the past 2 to 4 years based on the tree growth. And so we did pruning recently and now in the process of cleaning up the prunings. And then we'll just assess how the fruit is and see what we can do throughout the season. But no, last year they had issues with water not being turned on. And, so yeah, we're just going to be better stewards this year and see what we can do with it. And then if someone slaps on the rest of doing that, then I'll take a step back. But until then, I just figured might as well use the fruit for what we can and yeah, take good care of the trees.
Yeah, and I think moving forward, you know, I think for us, we do have someone who's stepping up to do
could at least want to formalize that to where we don't need to talk to them. So I appreciate your input.
Well, pruning classes are popular for people, and
they hold quite a few pruning classes.
Do they?
Yes.
Yeah. Especially for blueberries.
Yeah, Extension does.
Yeah, it's. What's the kiwi? There's a kiwi, and they had last strawberry. Last month they had a blueberry on site.
And grapes.
And the grapes, yes. Grapes are tough. Let's talk
about the visibility thing. There's no presence on Apple Maps. I mean, Google Maps has just a picture of a semi truck on the road. And those are just very easy. Like, if you were to drive past it, often people will just have a GPS and like, what is that? And to just have a few reviews, a few descriptions, a couple pictures that are a little bit more engaging, I think that's really easy way just to build awareness. So yeah, it just doesn't exist at all on Apple. And it does, you can Google it and get to it at Google Maps. There's no description or picture or what it is. So I don't know when that happens in the pipeline, but this is an easy way to build.
That's as part of the online visibility, and then just generally, we're going to improve all of that. I think part of something that has to be addressed before we start talking really big about it. You were at the meeting last week.
Yeah.
We need to get the leases finalized and the partners to all understand that improved access is happening.
Yeah.
Instead of just a maybe, it's no longer an up for debate. Yeah. We just have to figure out how we're going to go about it.
We're planful and engaging, so as a big of an ogre than I am, we're still trying to be planful in that design, that engagement. And it's happening, but it's not tomorrow. It's going to be a couple years of process, just because that's what it takes.
Well, I think you need a little fruit orchard, and then all of what that process is.
So, in order to Carol, you're going to submit a lease proposal.
I think if you Google WSU Extension or Clark County Extension, that's when you get the images that come up with the on-site.
Well, Matthew, is the food bank who's been doing the workout at Foley? Is that you? Okay.
We have another orchard on some park property we own that
somebody's got a program.
Is that over in Flida?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because it's probably one of our neighbors that's donating.
Urban Abundance, that's who it is. Yeah. Thank you.
That's what I'm trying to get, because that's what that program is. It's a gleaning program.
Oh, right.
I'm trying to get them to come.
Yeah.
But they're kind of trying to
pick them.
Yeah. So it's like most government programs, we have 35 things we want to do, and so it's important to only time and money for five. With that, I see clock check, which means a call to adjourn.
Call to adjourn. Everybody ready?
Sandy, adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
There we go. So
second.
Yeah. Except for Rachel.
See you in there.
Stirring up trouble.
Well, thank you very much.
Bye. Thank you, Carol.
So if you look at the employment, did you know?
I know we exchanged emails.
Yeah, we never.
And I may have had an email because I tell the Rotarians I could join me.